In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Welcome to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. It's your call for the best college football coverage. From National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports Wednesday morning. Here, that's Barton Simmons. I'm Chip Patterson. And we've got Ryan Abraham, USCFootball.com, coming up here in just a little bit. Going into Under the Hood and getting a good look at the Trojans as they are 2-0. They are on their way to the college football playoff. And BYU is up next in the Trojans' run of wins. So Barton Simmons, how are you doing right now? Because we get to be home, and we were discussing this right before we started taping. Everyone talks about this week like it's going to be, it's like, oh, no ranked on ranked teams. Oh, look at all these point spreads. But I look at the slate differently. I think, man, I get my eyes on not fully formed teams, but we're going to get our eyes on a bunch of teams with 2 weeks of action. You know, biggest adjustments that any college football program makes is week one to week two. So we should be seeing true identities revealed this weekend, and I'm looking forward to being able to take it all in from the home studio.
Yeah, I am too, and especially because, like, as you look at the statistics comprehensively for this season so far, you know, through 2 weeks, pretty much everyone has got some sort of just total cupcake under their belt that totally skews the statistics. I'm looking at you, South Carolina, with your 79-7 win or whatever it was last week.
Record setting.
Yeah, that's right. But everyone's kind of got something like that. And now, I mean, getting into week three, we're starting to, even if it's, you know, Notre Dame, New Mexico, Temple, Maryland, Penn State, Pitt, Ohio State, Indiana.
How about
Georgia,
Mississippi?
Arkansas State.
Yeah. I mean, Mississippi State, Kansas State.
I love Mississippi State, Kansas State.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one I'm excited for. You know, Washington State, Houston. I mean, all these are at least games you can just sort of tabulate as real. I mean, they're not just going and a glorified scrimmage against some FCS team or some bottom of the pack FBS team in the 120s to 130s. So, we can start to at least garner and mine out some real valuable information.
Some running through some news before we welcome in Ryan Abraham. First, we go back to Stanford. Speaking of USC, it looks like KJ Costello, the Stanford starting quarterback, will be available as the Cardinal make the trip to face UCF in Orlando. Also, it comes with the update that Walker Little, the very, very talented left tackle, is going to be missing the entire season. This UCF-Stanford game, let's throw that onto the list of sort of intriguing games where I feel like for UCF, we're going to be able to take a lot of notes and learn a lot about what that team is going to be as it tries to return to the New Year's Six bowl games as the top-ranked Group of Five program. And for Stanford, coming off that loss to USC, a lot to wonder about if they're going to be able to pull the pieces together. The Knights are 7.5-point favorites in this game. Do you think that we see KJ Costello? Do you think that KJ Costello makes a difference? And sort of what are the other pieces to this game that you find yourself picking apart or getting excited for?
I don't think he makes... I mean, look, I think KJ Costello is really good, but I've been... I forget how much we've discussed this or how much I've had to just sort of be talking about this in other settings. So I don't want to, at the risk of repeating myself and overstating this, I am not a believer in Stanford from an identity standpoint. I think there's a real existential crisis at Stanford. They're not physical. They're not tough. I don't know. I'm not going to say they're not tough, but they're not they're not strong and physical. And remember, I think this offseason where their renowned strength and conditioning coach was let go due to some sort of off the field incident. And I don't know that shows up immediately, but I think it's part of the crack in the foundation that's starting to widen. You look at their best offensive lineman gone. You look at Foster Sorrell also. Look, it's like he's probably going to be out. Maybe two freshmen playing on the offensive line. We'll talk to Ryan Abraham a little bit about how they got pushed around by that USC offensive line. It's not about KJ Costello to me. It never has been. And there was a lot of JJ Arcega-Whiteside just being someone that could go up and catch jump balls and mask maybe some of the flaws that offense and that team had. And you still got Colby Parkinson, and they're still throwing some jump balls to him. But I've lost all faith in Stanford as a team you can trust.
Please watch CBS Sports HQ at 4 p.m. every single weekday. It is a college football show. CBSSportsHQ.com. You can also get it on all of your CBS Sports devices. 24/7 streaming news service. Barton and I are on it a very good bit. And yes, that was where we did the 1-2 punch on Stanford on CBS Sports HQ. I called it an identity crisis. Barton had to follow, and he took it to existential. I mean, just dragging the Cardinal on CBS Sports HQ. You can watch it weekdays at 4 p.m.
You know, another guy that's no longer there, that was a big part of their identity, and not to dwell on this, we can move on, but Mike Bloomgren too. And as we see Rice putting up points on Wake and you know, moving the ball against an Army team that even Michigan had trouble moving the ball against, and kind of turning this physical style of play loose on a Rice team that had been running spread their whole life. I think that's interesting and noteworthy to wonder if Mike Bloomgren's departure has had an impact as well.
Also in the news, Ed Orgeron coming out and mentioning that he believed that the air conditioning was out in the visitors' locker room at Darrell K. Royal Memorial Stadium. This, you know, on one part of it, it is kind of a shrug my shoulder. I've always assumed that the visitors' locker room was going to have some kind of less than ideal experience. On the other hand, I perfectly would understand if, you know, some staffer just didn't look at the thermostat or didn't hit the button, or you know, this could be something that's very, very simple, though it's led to a war of words. Texas denies that the AC was broken. Other opponents coming out and saying they've never had issues with the air conditioning. Feel free to comment on that in particular. If you want. Also, we could just acknowledge it was hot as hell. So, I mean, like, maybe it was just hot because you had 100 bodies that were just out there in 100-degree weather, and then you put them in a locker room. So if you've got a thought there, but I wanted to also take this into Barton's worst visiting locker room experience from your playing career as a two-time All-Ivy League selection at Yale.
Well, first of all, as you sort of go through the injury reports this week, B.J. Foster for Texas has got a significant hamstring injury. He's out. It looks like Kalavon Chasen is in a walking boot for LSU. Glenn Logan, Rashard Lawrence, unlikely to play. There's cramps all over the field, so much so that Tom Herman was sort of asked in the postgame presser if he felt like it was a disadvantage or threw his team out of sorts, and he said yes, and asked if it was he felt like they were authentic or genuine in their injuries. He said, I don't know. It was a very, there's clear frustration with all that, but it was a hot night. It was perhaps it just seeped into that locker room. As for the second question, you know, I can't remember one where from a climate standpoint, it was miserable. Honestly, the worst visiting locker room that I had was probably Harvard. And I love the Harvard Stadium. It's this big Coliseum, vertical stadium. We play them in late November where it's just, this turns into a wind tunnel and it's freezing out there. But their visiting locker room is like, you walk into the side of the stadium into a door that's for like, well, I don't know, a midget door, like gnomes. Like it's like a 5 foot high door, and you got all these 6 foot three, 6 foot five guys that have to sort of duck under there. And you go into this, you're basically like under the bleachers of a high school stadium or something, and there's like gravel, and it splits you into two rooms. There's not enough room for the whole team to convene for one talk. You know, the defensive guys sort of have to listen to the team get up before we go back out.
On a closed circuit, you've almost got like closed circuit. Like you've got to watch it in the auxiliary room.
This old school, and they have a beautiful facility for sort of post game and pregame, but the halftime locker room is just a mess. So that would be probably the best one that I could come up with for you. But I'm sure there's probably a couple others that I'm not even thinking of. There was, we weren't hitting the best facilities on the Ivy League Patriot League tour in September, October.
So it's like Harvard's facilities were still built for 1700s heights. Basically.
Well, no, because they actually had nice facilities on like the, you know, for them and for the, you know, the locker rooms and the weight rooms and the athletic facilities. But in the visitors' locker room specifically for the game, it was just, they're basically just like stick you under the stadium and under the bleachers and say, figure it out.
Let me fire up some sound here. Nick Saban and Alabama have been quite outspoken about their dissatisfaction with getting a noon kick against Southern Miss. And for there's lots of different ways to attack this one. Like, first of all, Alabama has probably gotten preferable kickoff times for a while. And also, complaining about kickoff times, in my mind, doesn't resonate, because you have exchanged the right to set your kickoff time when you accept the money from your media partners, because the media partners get to set the kickoff times, and that is one of their rights in that agreement that includes millions and millions of dollars being paid to the conferences and distributed to the schools. So just to get that one out of the way, I understand that for fans, there are times that you would love to be at the stadium tailgating and leaving the stadium and getting home. But the reason why those game times are totally out of your favorite coaches, your favorite athletic directors, your school's control is because that brand new facility was built with some of that media rights money. So just to go ahead and get that part out of here, Alabama, they point to some heat concerns, and that is, health is something that, you know, fan health and health and safety, I can understand some of that there. But it's led to some fun in terms of some jabbing in the Iron Bowl rivalry. So let's hear what Gus Malzahn had to say about some noon kickoffs this week after Nick Saban was outspoken against them.
Okay, our guys are excited to be back home for our second home game, playing a very solid Kent State team. 6 p.m. kick. Personally, I wish it was at noon. We'd have more time to prepare for our next opponent. Really.
I love Hot Seat Gus.
Yeah, I love it.
I love Hot Seat Gus. Just, yeah, I mean, and I'll be honest, like I'm almost a little surprised. I guess Alabama's just, you know, they want prime time as much as possible. But I mean, it's almost just defaults to the scheduling debate that I know Nick Saban's sick of talking about. But if you don't play anybody, you're going to get of course Alabama's going to be in the prime window when they play someone decent. And that's just what happens when you don't play anybody. And I think that most coaches, I don't know, most coaches I talk to, I'll put it that way, would probably side with Gus Malzahn here. I think it was a shot very clearly, and it was awesome.
Well executed, and right in your opening
shot.
Yeah.
but I do think it's probably there's some honesty to it too. I think a lot of coaches, you know, like to be. I mean, you've got the whole day blocked off if you're playing at nighttime, and then you've got, you know, you're not done till really late. Sometimes there's travel, and then Sunday hits, and I mean, it's bedtime, and then Sunday hits, and you're back to work. Whereas Saturday, if you get done by 2 o'clock, then you got some time to spend with your family. You've got some time to get a jump start on prep for the next day and the next week. So I actually think Gus Malzahn is, as much as it was a shot, is probably a shared opinion.
The and Alabama, I think, also probably comes into that spot where Auburn Kent State gets 6 p.m. because it's not going to be on one of the most like widely. It's not going to be like one of the first round of picks, right? Like it's probably you know, going to be on that on an SEC network, on an ESPN2, because Alabama is Alabama. They get bumped up to, you know, one of the first rounds of picks, but because they're playing Southern Miss, you don't get the prime time, and that's kind of why they get slotted right there. So it's like, yeah, but you're Alabama, and you've gotten a lot of kickoff time, a lot of kickoff time advantages, and again, come on. It's just I felt like there was no sympathy out here in these college football streets when Alabama's screaming about a kickoff time.
Yeah, that's Nick Saban just looking to. He's just a perpetually unhappy, unsatisfied person. And that's what makes him so good.
Sure.
And it's a gift in a way. But, I mean, the guy is never happy. And, hey, that's why they're never satisfied with number one, I guess.
Any other news items from the notebook that we want to get out of here? We'll be back on Thursday morning with our week three locks, of course, with Barton Simmons, Tom Fornelli, myself. Anything else before we get to Ryan Abraham?
You know, there's a few injuries out there. Okay, I just noticed Oregon State's Addison Gums towards ACL. No, no one doesn't really care about Oregon State except for me, but that's going to hurt my over bet, and that's disappointing for Addison, who is a transfer from Oklahoma. You know, Elijah Sindelar for Purdue may be out. Ole Miss got a linebacker, Muhammad Sanago, who may be out. So there's some key injuries starting to pile up. Something to keep an eye on for the Locks Pod for Thursday.
No doubt. All right, here we go. Coming up after the break, Ryan Abraham, USCFootball.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And now it is our pleasure to welcome back to the Cover 3 podcast, friend of the show, longtime, multi-year friend of the show, Ryan Abraham, USCFootball.com, at Inside Troy on Twitter. Ryan, the twists and turns of covering USC football make the job never dumb. And there have been so many ups and downs along the way here, especially here for what decade maybe? How would you diagnose this current point with Lynn Swann being out? You know, Carol Folt, you know, recent arrival. Now she's going to be in charge of sort of guiding this whole thing moving forward. Clay Helton, you know, sort of perma under fire. How does this moment compare to some of the other twists and turns of craziness that we've seen in the last decade?
Yeah, Chip, it's probably top 35. You know, it's not really that high on the list. It's just there's been so many weird things with this USC football program. And, you know, you put yourself as if you're a program like this, you put yourself in that position when you hire three straight athletic directors that their, you know, their experience was being a former football player. No athletic administration. And, you know, you've never been an AD before. You can only do that for so long. I think USC has a lot of inherent advantages. There's not the competitive landscape on the West Coast like you would have if you're in Ohio State or in Alabama or a Texas. But they've made so many bad decisions over the years. And now the hope is that Carol Folt comes in and just kind of cleans up the mess. But it's a mess that's been built up for a while. And it's university-wide, not just in the athletic department. But this was a good first step, at least for athletics. They needed to have Lynn Swann out of there. And they needed someone with real athletic experience in there. So I'm curious to see which direction she takes us, because it seems like she's come in and taken charge over the last couple of months.
All right, so why don't you give us the cliff notes here, update us a little bit on where we're at with USC. So are we in a new position of confidence that this administration from top down can handle this more effectively than they have the last, what, three times? And I think the follow-up to that for me would be how realistic – or unrealistic is it to expect that an AD hire can get done quickly so that if a decision does have to be made with Clay Helton, USC is equipped to make it?
Yeah, those are two really important factors, Barton, because it's not like something that you could take, you know, 6 months to do because you know you might have a big football decision coming up. And that's the main reason you wanted to get Lynn Swann out of there. There's a million reasons, but, you know, you wanted to put someone competent in that position that could make the right move for your football program going forward, because that's the bell cow. That's where all the money is made. That's what moves the needle at USC. And I think as far as confidence, because of some of the factors leading up to this, I mean, there's been so many narratives like, hey, the last time they hired an athletic director was 1984, like someone that has been an athletic director before. It's been a really long time. And the LA Times did a big piece on one of the USC mega boosters, Wayne Hughes, who's the founder of Public Storage. He's given reportedly $400 million to the university. He's been friends with Lynn Swann for decades. And a lot of us heard that, you know, he was basically the reason that Lynn Swann was put in place. And Max Nikias, the former president, was very focused on raising money. He had a $6 billion capital campaign that they eclipsed. They got to $7 billion, but then some of it was, are you focusing so much on money that you don't really care about the character of some of these guys? And that's where a lot of the non-athletic scandals for USC, I think, kind of came from. But because of that LA Times story, because of the narrative of hiring three straight football players, I think that Carol Folt does want to bring in someone that doesn't necessarily have to be a USC person, that's been an athletic director before. And she said so much in her statement that they wanted someone with experience. So I think it became, because it was such a long-running joke that USC doesn't really take this hire seriously, that they kind of have to now. Now, who knows? We've seen them make terrible decisions before, but my guess, Barton, is they're going to actually do something to get a good athletic director in there. It was something we haven't seen for a long time.
But will it happen in time? And where will USC football be at this time? Okay, so let's turn our attention to this team, which already saw JT Daniels get knocked out, but then Keaton Slovis comes in, just sort of a strong emergence for Slovis to jump ahead and to grab control of Graham Harrell's offense. As you've been sort of grading him in his progression along the way, was there anything that you sensed from being around the team and being around the program that suggested that he would be ready to have this kind of response to getting thrust into the starting role?
Yeah, you know, Chip, I don't think I was expecting what I saw from him. You know, he's completing 85% of his passes. He looked really good against Stanford. That Stanford team I thought would be pretty good, but maybe I'm not convinced that they are. They were a little bit banged up. But, I mean, for a true freshman to come in, make the reads that he did, put the ball in the right spot most of the time, it really was impressive for him. And the question for me is going to be, we saw all the quarterbacks get better once Graham Harrell came in and he ran this offense in the spring, and then he ran it again in fall camp. All of them looked better. Like, could Matt Fink have come in and looked about as good as Keaton Slovis? Or if JT Daniels wasn't hurt, I feel he would have had a similar kind of game. I think the system is so much better, but Slovis did take it to another level. And he's someone that, you know, Barton knows, we didn't see him as much on the recruiting trail. He didn't do all the 7-on-7 camps and things like that. He didn't start till his junior year. Now, he did have Kurt Warner as his quarterback coach and offensive coordinator in high school, I think that certainly helps. But for a kid like that to come in and show the poise that he did, I mean, he came into fall camp, he expected to win the job from the incumbent JT Daniels. So I think he has a lot of the intangibles. Curious to see what he does. They got three of the next four games on the road, some really tough contests. But, you know, you couldn't have asked for a much better debut for a Keaton Slovis. Is he Sam Darnold 2.0? It's hard to say at this point, but, man, he was impressive to me and looked better, I think, in the game than we saw him even in practices.
So Keaton Slovis is the headline, and obviously the game he had was impressive. And I didn't watch the game in real time, but when I circled back and I did check it out, I mean, he didn't disappoint. But my bigger takeaway was kind of what I saw from some of the other areas of USC that have been underachieving in the past. Like, Ryan, I'm curious, can we pin what that offensive line looked like onto this new offense too? Because, I mean, there was some plays in that game. I mean, A, there was a lot of time for Keaton Slovis. Granted, he got the ball quickly when needed. But also, I mean, there were some massive holes and some times where they just caved in that Stanford defensive line. Is this a new mentality? Is this a new system? What can we attribute to some of the uncharacteristic success of the offensive line?
Yeah, I love the way you put that, uncharacteristic success. I think if you look at the talent on this line, it's probably not as good as the last couple of years, certainly not as deep. I think Drew Richmond coming in from Tennessee, the grad transfer, helped a little bit. I mean, he played pretty good in that game. But I think when they had Neil Callaway as the offensive line coach, he didn't seem to really relate to the players. They just didn't seem to get better. The players didn't look like they were getting developed. They had Tim Drevno on the staff last year, who came over from Michigan, but he was coaching running backs, so he's coaching out of position. Now he's full-time on the offensive line. I think that's helped. I think Aaron Osmus, the new strength and conditioning coach, has come in and really put a focus on getting these guys stronger and more powerful. And I think all of that has helped. But I did see, like what you saw, Barton, some of that push from the offensive line when they would try to run the ball on, you know, third short situations or whatever. And it seemed to be different than what we've seen the last couple of years. I thought the scheme would help them because, like you said, you're going to get the ball out faster. But the line is actually playing better as well. And Graham Harrell would love to have a closer to 50-50 run-pass ratio, even though it's an air raid offense. He likes to run the ball too, but you need the offensive line to get that push. Otherwise, you're going to be relying on the quarterback. So I think they feel pretty good about it. The offensive line, like I said, maybe not as talented the last couple of years, but they're playing a lot better from what I've seen so far.
How is that group going to? Oh, sorry, Barton. You want to get a little follow?
No. Go ahead. Sounds like you got a follow on the O line. Go ahead.
Yeah. How do you think? Because there is it, Ryan. I'm with you. There's something that's in the back of my mind that's thinking, I don't know if Stanford is as good as I thought Stanford could be. I thought that this was going to be a snap back to what we assume from the David Shaw Stanford Cardinal, and it's possible that we are in a little bit of a valley within the trajectory of that program. And so, with those results being what they were, how would you handicap that group's ability to get the kind of push that they're going to need, to get the kind of protection that they're going to need with, I mean, Utah coming up, Washington coming up, and even some of the physicality that they're going to face this weekend with BYU? Is that something that that you believe is going to be able to be replicated, or at least they'll be able to continue to hold their own against those tough defensive fronts?
Yeah, I mean, Notre Dame's coming up too. BYU, you got grown men. That's what I want to watch most. I think Slovis, I think the wide receivers, it's the best group in the Pac-12, one of the best in the country. I mean, they're just making all kinds of crazy catches. But the offensive line against some of those tougher fronts is what I want to see. But even against lesser opponents, we hadn't seen them push people around like they did. I think a pretty good Fresno State defensive front, and then also with Stanford. So I think they're trending in the right direction. Are they going to wilt on the road? Are they going to wilt under like a relentless pursuit from Utah and that probably the best defensive line in the Pac-12? Hard to say at this point, but I'm going to give them a puncher's chance because they have just looked better than what we've seen in the past. I think it's a tougher group, and a lot of it's coming from like the off-season workouts, the strength and conditioning. For whatever reason, it just wasn't clicking before. There was clicks on the team, and now they're all kind of, they were lifting as one in the off-season. It's such cliche when you talk about strength and conditioning coach, but I've actually seen what they did in the off-season seem to translate on the field. So I think I'd give him a shot, Chip, as far as that goes. But those are going to be the tougher tests. I think over the next 4 weeks, there are going to be some really tough ones for them. But I think the offensive line is going to play better, even though, like I said, they're probably not as talented as they were the last couple of years.
So, Ryan, you've walked into a podcast where for the second straight year, one of us has predicted USC in the playoffs. I am not going to raise my hand this year. I learned my lesson last year, but Chip got sucked in this year to the USC five-star seduction. That said, as we sort of look at how this team can maybe fulfill Chip's expectations, I don't know who else has them, but Chip's, you know, another area where I kind of was encouraged the other night was defense. And where I looked to was Elijah Griffin and some of the big plays he made in defending Colby Parkinson and making some plays in the run support behind the line of scrimmage. And he just kind of looked like a guy that was out there competing and sort of had a little more, I don't know, attitude than we've seen over the past on the defense side of the ball for USC. And granted, look, maybe they were just sort of front running as they're going on a 42-3 run for Stanford. But is there, can Chip get any confidence in that side of the ball as well? Like, do you feel like there's a vibe of confidence and, I don't know, competitive toughness on that side of the ball as well?
Yeah. You know, and Elijah Griffin, who's the son of Warren G, which is funny, but he was out there. He's given up 7 inches and like 75 pounds to Colby Parkinson, and was he defended him a couple of times, and it wasn't just in garbage time. It was key. Like, you know, USC was down 14-3, and they fumble the kickoff, and Stanford could have punched it in, and he batted a couple of balls away and really saved it. I mean, I think that saved the game for USC. It was 17-3. Then they went on that 42-3 run, but I like the defensive front a lot, Barton. They're rotating guys. Clancy Pendergast hasn't really been someone that likes to, the defensive coordinator, to rotate a bunch of guys. But he had 8 different defensive linemen playing in that game. They're using more of a 4-man front, not just against Stanford, but they did it against Fresno State as well. Where a lot of the times they've only had like 2 guys with their hand on the ground. They've mixed it up quite a bit, and they're bringing fresh bodies in. And by the end of the game, I think they were fresh and they were able to, you know, it didn't matter because they were blowing them out, but I think that's going to help them a lot. The linebackers kind of been banged up a little bit, and I don't know if the play of a guy like a Palaiye Naote, who's former 5-star, who's all everything, but, you know, he's missed some tackles. I think they're still kind of coming into their own. And the secondary is really young, but you get a guy like Elijah Griffin, you said, balling out. I think they're a lot more competitive. And I think the important part is that this is a team last year, if you would get punched in the mouth, they would wilt. You know, sometimes they'd go out to a 14-0 lead on like a Notre Dame or a Utah, and then they would just, you know, something bad would happen and it would go downhill. This was the opposite, where they were down, you know, 2 touchdowns and were able to make a big play on defense, and then the offense got going. So to me, it just seems like there is a little bit of a different attitude and toughness and competitiveness. And Chip, I wasn't feeling good about your pick after the first game, but after Stanford, you're like, hey, I mean, they have the most talented roster of anyone they play. You guys do the 24/7 talent composite. They're number 4 in the country.
Yeah.
If they can play up to that potential, which it looked like they did against Stanford, I mean, there's no reason they couldn't, you know, make a run here. But it will know a lot over the next month or so with those 4 games. But if they can make a run there, then Chip, I'd feel pretty good about your pick.
Well, and I'm so glad that you mentioned the strength and conditioning, because I'm not close to the program like you are, but just acknowledging that changes needed to be made there, I think was such a huge first step in reestablishing some toughness for a team that didn't seem to be all that tough. I didn't trust USC's offensive line to be able to get 3rd and short and goal-to-go situations. I didn't trust that defense to be able to not, like you mentioned, you know, wilt in situations where they got punched in the mouth. And so to have these it was a little bit blind, and it was a little bit of belief and a little bit of trying to jump on the other side of the doom and gloom train as everyone's trying to fire Clay Helton by the mid-October and slide Urban Meyer in on a golf cart from the Fox studios. Like, I wanted to acknowledge the fact that, you know, they had recognized places where there were needed to be changes both on the at the offense and at the strength and conditioning level, and the talent, as you mentioned, is just phenomenal. So why not? Why not USC winning the Pac-12? It didn't happen that long ago. It's just going to be, as you mentioned, very, very tough with the schedule coming up. And so I guess that is the next step of this is in the Clay Helton conversation. How has your mentality changed, if at all, about just sort of projecting, predicting, thinking, or handicapping the way that the Trojans are going to perform in some of these difficult tests as we keep moving through the season?
Yeah, you know, I looked at all the changes in the offseason. I think there was just some glaring errors. Like, their talent was about the same as last year, I would say. They were still fourth in the talent index, and they finished 5-7, which is baffling. You know, so that's where you have to be. There's some, you have to have some caution there, because, you know, hey, they had a really good roster last year and still messed it up. Like, beyond, like, you almost had to try to lose seven games last year with the kind of players that they had. But then you look forward to this year. I think that the Graham Harrell thing was big. The fact that Clay Helton could step away from the offense, and they didn't have this kind of gumbo thing where everyone was meddling. People were blaming T. Martin. That wasn't T. Martin's offense. It was like a little bit of Sark, a little bit of Lane. It was a poorly designed and planned offense. They didn't scheme wide receivers open. It was all hero ball. Now you bring in somebody new. It's a very simple offense, and you saw it on display. Even the first couple drives for JT Daniels in the opener, I mean, that was a thing of beauty. This looks like a competent offense. And that alone, they should score 10 more points a game than they did last year, and you can win a whole bunch more games. But the strength and conditioning coach, moving some of the coaches around, like, you know, Drevno shouldn't have been the running backs coach. They put him back to the offensive line. They fixed some things. They plugged some holes that were just it was self-inflicted wounds that USC didn't need to have last year that needed to be fixed. So I think that's why people can be somewhat optimistic, because you look at the talent, it's like it's there. It's not going to be easy to beat, you know, a Utah, go on the road and beat Washington or Notre Dame. But those games are all winnable. I mean, Washington just lost at home to Cal, which kind of baffled me. But so it's there. And that people are looking at it like, wow, this is a team that actually could – make some sort of a run. It's not like you're Alabama and you have to beat, you know, LSU and Georgia and Auburn, all those teams. Like, it's the Pac-12. It's not, you know, it's not this killer murderous row. I thought Washington would be the class of the conference. They go out and lose their first conference game. So we'll see. I mean, it's weird. You know, Oregon goes on, you know, on the road and loses to, so they got Oregon coming up later. They lose to Auburn. So I think USC has a real shot here, but we've seen them. Just, you know, you kind of, it's a team that screwed up a free lunch before. I'm not sure if they're not going to screw it up again, if you know what I mean.
This weekend they're heading to Provo. Ryan, what's your expectation for that one? Kind of a tricky game, and one that I feel like they should probably have their antenna up, make sure they're ready for. What do you expect out of that one and see on the horizon there?
Yeah, I've watched this BYU team quite a bit at the end of last year. I think Travis Wilson, I mean, he was perfect in the bowl game. You know, he had some struggles. That Utah front really gave him and the entire BYU team some fits. But to go into Knoxville, even though, you know, it's a Tennessee team that's not having a great year, but to get that win on the road, I thought that was a big deal. And, you know, they'll come home. They got USC and Washington back-to-back. So that's a really tough early part of the schedule for BYU. But I think this is a game that the Cougars are going to circle. I think this is one that they really want to win. If you looked at that four-game stretch that they had with Utah, Tennessee, USC, and Washington, what was the easiest game? What would have been the most winnable game? You probably would have said that, you know, 5-7 USC squad, because at least it was at home. So I think this is something that BYU is going to be up for. Like we said, they're grown men that are playing football. It could potentially be a trap game. Is USC all really high and mighty after beating Stanford? There's no way you can take your foot off the pedal. But if they come out and score points like we saw, I mean, it could be a Big 12 bad kind of game where they just score a bunch of points, but you still, you know, win or lose. It'll at least be more fun. I think they're going to be able to take care of business against BYU. But this is one of those games where you might stub your toe a couple of times. You have to make sure you're able to bounce back and get the momentum back, because this is, you know, they'll jump on top of you. And I think, you know, Travis Wilson might have a really good game. And we have the USC secondary. They made some good plays, but the last two quarterbacks they faced haven't been all that accurate. I think Wilson's a lot more accurate of a quarterback. So he might, you know, hit a couple of those big plays that maybe You know, we saw Davis Mills miss last week. So it might put USC in a different position. It's going to be up to the offense to score some more. So I think USC can handle business, but you got to be ready. If they play, you know, a C-plus game, they'll definitely lose.
Beware of Mormon Manziel.
You guys like him, right? He's good. You know?
Yeah, he's a good player.
He's a very good player. He is Ryan Abraham. You can follow him on Twitter at InsideTroy. USCFootball.com is where we get all of our USC football tidbits and information. They're one of the best in the network. So, Ryan, thank you so much for taking some time to come and join us here on the Cover 3 podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me on. You guys have a great college football weekend. It's going to be fun.
Woo! Hey, Ryan, make sure you tell your people at USC that Jack Del Rio wants the job, okay? He's trying to spread the word, so let them all know.
Yeah, the message boards really love to hear that. They go crazy hearing, oh, yeah, another former USC football. That sounds great.
Hey, what is it? He needs to not know the fight song, right? Is that one of the first rules of the next head coach?
I only have two rules, and people get on me for this. Like, they can't know the USC fight song, and they have to have been a successful head coach somewhere before. So that's all. I mean, it's really that simple. Like, USC can't follow those rules. I don't know why, but if you just did that, you would be fine.
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it.
All right, take care.